Ferguson, Missouri is bracing for another night of demonstrations following the police shooting death of unarmed black teenager Michael Brown more than a week ago. 31 protesters were arrested last night, and yesterday President Obama said this about the escalating conflict in Ferguson.
Well, I understand the passions and the anger that arise over the death of Michael Brown. Giving into that anger by looting or carrying guns and even attacking the police only serves to raise tensions and stir chaos.
Well, when Blair Kelly looks upon those passions and anger and those clashes with police, she sees the long shadow of race history in Missouri, dating all the way back to the 1850s, specifically to the United States Supreme Court's 1857 decision in the infamous Dred Scott case. And as Kelly recently wrote in The Root, the Dred Scott decision meant that to be black in America in the late 1850s was to live in a land that said you did not have a future. Blair Kelly is an associate professor of history at North Carolina State University, and she joins us from WUNC in Chapel Hill. Professor Kelly, welcome. And let's just start with the Dred Scott case today. It's looked upon as a low point for the Supreme Court. He was a slave in Missouri who sued for his emancipation but was denied. So remind us why that happened.
Well, it was a changing time period, right? At that time, the United States is both the established states and the expanding territories. And the question of whether or not slavery would expand was up for debate. And so we have to remember, Missouri was part of this sort of frontier space, which was decided that it would be a slave state. But there were other frontier spaces that were not. And so Dred Scott ended up living in both free territories and then being returned to Missouri. But when his master dies and the widow of his master decides that she will sell out his labor and not give him any of the money, not treat him as a free person, he decides to sue for his freedom in Missouri.
And then that case makes its way to the Supreme Court and he's denied his freedom. I mean, you remind us how the justice writing for the majority, Roger Taney, basically wrote that African-Americans at that time had no rights which the white man was bound to respect. But then, I mean, in your piece in The Root, you say that it doesn't sound all that far off from the situation facing Ferguson, Missouri today. Why do you say that?
Part of what struck me as a historian, I always want to think about contemporary moments through the lens of history, not because there are exact parallels for today, but because they can teach us about the questions that we're asking and make us ask maybe more challenging and deeper questions. And so as I watched the events in Ferguson unfold last week, I was so struck by the thing that I knew about Missouri, that it was Dred Scott, that I knew in that space African-Americans had battled for their freedom against slavery. And a person like Dred Scott, who had really had the fortitude to keep suing about what he knew was right and was told by the court in that case that he did not count in any way, shape, or form. He would never be a citizen. And so the kind of alienation that I think sometimes African-Americans feel from their state when their lives are not respected, when their right to protest peacefully is not respected, when they are suspects simply for walking around their own neighborhoods. It made me think of that phrase, rights that no white man is bound to respect. I think it's important for us to remember the rights that African Americans still have today and not alienate them from their Americanness and not alienate them from their constitutional rights.
Right. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that you were looking at this through a historical lens, because any honest conversation about race in America, including the ones that have to happen about what's going on in Ferguson, really have to include an accounting of American history. But, you know, I imagine many people hearing this are thinking, you know, Dred Scott was a slave. He was living in a nation that at that time had codified laws denying personhood to African Americans. I mean, they were considered property. This, however, is 2014. You know, Michael Brown wasn't a slave. We've gone through the civil rights movement. There's still work to be done, but it's an entirely different country. And
absolutely,
the two can't really be compared. I mean, what's your response to that?
It's not an issue of comparison, because I don't believe in, you know, now is 1850. We've come so far. African Americans had for generations struggled for their rights of citizenship after the end of slavery, which they fought valiantly for. And so I know how hard people worked to move us forward. I know the kinds of differences that African Americans experience routinely. The classes I teach in, the rooms I enter in as a professor, I could not have entered in except to clean up. Mm-hmm. A few generations ago, my mother's generation, she could not have legally attended the places where I attended and the place where I work. So I know that so much has changed. But I'm devastated when I see the language and the coding of race that's inflected by this history that we all share, that we sometimes are afraid to talk about when we think of African Americans' rights, when we don't think of black youth as the equivalent of white youth having folly and making mistakes and not deserving to be so harshly treated by the police. The police are there to protect and serve every citizen, not just certain citizens. And so when we see American citizens being tear gassed and shot at with rubber bullets, and when we see a young man who may or may not have been perfect, last time I checked, citizenship didn't mean you had to be perfect. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that you deserve the opportunity for justice. And so if he had committed a crime, I wish the policeman would have thought instead about how do I arrest this guy as opposed to what he did that day.
Right. Well, let me ask you, you wrote in your piece in The Root that although we African-Americans, and particularly African-American youth, I hear you saying, although we shouldn't have to do anything to prove our humanity and our citizenship, African-Americans, through our struggle, have more than demonstrated that we are part of the people, too. Now, that sort of puts me in mind of the clip that we played a little earlier from President Obama, because he basically said that he'd like to see the looting and the protests curbed a little. And it suggests that at least he believes that part of that continued expression of humanity and citizenship means tamping down the unbridled passions and angers that we're seeing on the street. And I just wonder what your reaction is to that.
I didn't really hear him say stop protesting. I heard him say stop looting. And I heard him say don't be
violent. Well, he says giving in to the anger.
I mean, I think people have a right to be angry. I am angry. I think that we have to remember that the root of this anger begins with the action of the police that day. And I think moving toward justice will quell anger more than talking about it. But I know that the Obama administration, particularly Eric Holder, is working to make sure that there's a thorough investigation. And I think people will find that to assist in the process mm-hmm. of moving forward.
Professor Kelly, thanks so much for speaking with us. Blair Kelly is an associate professor of history at North Carolina State University. Her article in The Root is linked at hereandnow.org.